here in Region 2.
And as we just heard, President Trump has temporarily lifted the Jones Act, waiving shipping restrictions for the island for 10 days. Some congressional members, including Senator John McCain, say 10 days is not enough. McCain and Senator Mike Lee of Utah introduced a measure yesterday that would permanently exempt the island from the shipping law. To learn more, I'm joined by Andrew Schrank. He's a professor of sociology and international and public affairs at Brown University and a member of the Center for a New Economy Growth Commission for Puerto Rico. Andrew, what are the financial and even moral obligations for the mainland U.S. when it comes to Puerto Rico?
Well, those are good questions, Steve. First of all, legally, it's not at all clear to me what the U.S. is obligated to do, in part because I'm not a lawyer, obviously. Also, it's just not clear what the obligations to a commonwealth are in this situation. There's already been debate about what the U.S. obligation is to Puerto Rico, given its status in the wake of the financial crisis. The hurricane simply complicates that. So there seems to be some controversy there. At the same time, morally, it's clear to me that the U.S. is obligated to do everything in its power to help Puerto Rico recover. Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens. They die in U.S. wars. They pay U.S. taxes, and they're protected by the U.S. Constitution and Bill of Rights. And to say that they deserve any less support than people in Houston or the Florida Keys is, to me, a moral outrage.
And does that moral outrage lead to action in this case? Does it need to be, do we need to see different pictures? When President Trump goes next week, what kind of impact could that have?
Well, it depends in large part on whether that's a purely symbolic visit or whether he's serious about getting stuff done. I don't have great confidence that he's serious about getting stuff done, given his attitude so far and the delay in visiting. I think if you look at the actual comparison of hurricanes Irma and Hurricane Harvey to the relief that's been provided to Puerto Rico, you'll see a huge gap. So, for example, Puerto Rico was far more vulnerable to begin with than Florida or the Atlantic coast of Texas. But the feds were far more responsive to the mainland storms. They had 30,000 FEMA and National Guard personnel in Texas after Harvey, and they distributed 3 million meals and 3 million liters of water there. They had more than 40,000 personnel in Florida and the southeast, where they distributed 7 million meals and 5 million liters of water. And by contrast, FEMA personnel in Puerto Rico number, as far as we can tell, about 10,000 for a far bigger storm in a far more vulnerable territory. And the reports I'm hearing say about 1.5 million meals and 1 million liters of water for, you know, what's one of the biggest storms to U.S. territory in more than 100 years. At the same time, Congress allocated billions of new FEMA funding in the aftermath of Harvey, but so far has allocated nothing post-Maria.
Where does this disconnect come from, whether it's from Congress or the average American?
I think there's the fact that Puerto Ricans really are second-class citizens. They do not have representation, or at least they don't have voting rights in the U.S. Congress. While they vote in primaries in the presidential elections, they don't vote in the presidential elections themselves. They're citizens of the United States, but they are not entitled to full representation in Washington. And I think that's a huge part of the problem. I also think a part of the problem is that many Americans on the mainland, and I've seen some survey data that suggests most Americans on the mainland don't recognize that Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens and thus are less conscious of their obligations to their fellow citizens in Puerto Rico. And then I actually think there's a deeper historical reason, which is that one reason Puerto Rico came into the U.S. orbit was imperial competition in the Atlantic Ocean in the 20th century. It came into the U.S. orbit after the Spanish-American War, and it became a site for massive U.S. military installations as the Cold War ramped up in the aftermath of the Second World War. And with the end of the Cold War and the sort of shift of U.S. focus from the Atlantic to the Pacific, those military installations have been largely closed down. And Puerto Rico really doesn't serve our geopolitical interest in the same way that it did 30, 40, 70 years ago. And I think as that's happened, Washington's taken its eye off the ball and really doesn't care about Puerto Rico in the same way it once did.
So how dire is the short-term future for Puerto Rico, considering the financial problems that were there even before these horrible storms?
Well, the future is really dire. I mean, you're talking about a huge problem over the next six months because the power grid is largely out. It's not just a lack of money, although there are huge debts in PREPA, the power company. It's also a problem of human resources because PREPA's generation and transmission infrastructure is extraordinarily old and requires highly skilled labor that is almost uniquely positioned to take care of this infrastructure. But that skilled resource base, those maintenance personnel, are highly skilled, and they are much better paid on the mainland. And as a result, there's been a large outmigration of these individuals, meaning that even if you had money to restore the power situation, you might not have the human resources to restore the power situation. And with the bulk of the power now out on the island as a result of the hurricane, that situation is simply going to be aggravated. If you think about the consequence of that, that lack of power, you've got to remember that most people's fresh water is pumped by electrical pumps. As a result, it's not just a problem of electrical power, it's a problem of fresh water. People keep food fresh and their medicine safe with refrigeration, and where's that refrigeration going to come from over the next 6 months or so, and maybe even more, in which you have a lack of power generation, lack of power transmission. It's going to be difficult, if not impossible, for people to communicate with each other. And really, the entire underpinnings of a modern society are at risk in Puerto Rico.
Are we going to see a huge outmigration of Puerto Ricans? And what does that do, again, for the short and intermediate future of the island, the Commonwealth?
This is an island that over the previous 10 years or so had lost on average about 50,000 people a year to the mainland. And, you know, most of the Puerto Ricans I know would rather stay in Puerto Rico. They, like most of us, like their homes, and they have connections in their homes. But as the economic situation becomes more and more dire, they often face little option but to flee to the mainland, where job opportunities are better, in some cases educational opportunities are better, and so on and so forth. If you think about an island that lost 10% of its population, as I said, an average of about 50,000 people a year due to the economic crisis in the decade prior to the hurricane, you can imagine a dramatic spike in out-migration to the mainland in the aftermath of the hurricane. And if that, in fact, comes to fruition, you can really imagine the island going into a death spiral. As people leave, skilled labor leaves, demand for local businesses leaves, and really the entire economy could just collapse.
Andrew Schrank is a professor at Brown University and a member of the Center for a New Economy Growth Commission for Puerto Rico.